Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City, and I welcome you. We're going to talk about autism and how Bayer herbicide causes autism at trace levels. Also, eating one particular food could reduce your risk of prostate cancer significantly. A lack of a particular vitamin leads to depression. The study now shows how red wine prevents cancer at the University of Colorado. And medical news today, following the Mediterranean diet could slow the aging process. And a lot more on that. Then we're going to talk about aquaponics. Urban Farm puts seniors to work. I think that is terrific, and I'll get into that. Also going to talk about there's an economic depression coming, but according to Daily Cause, don't blame it on Wall Street. The price of ground beef continues to break new records. Quote, it is now past $4 a pound. And I had someone call in the other day complaining about the high cost of a vegetarian diet. And as I explained to that gentleman, it's actually 50% less to eat vegetarian, healthy vegetarian, than it is to eat a standard American diet. My guest in the second part of our program will be Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. She is the physician that has challenged the vaccine makers, saying there's no such thing as a safe vaccine. Today, we're going to talk about corruption and fraud of medical journals in the peer review process, because we're led to believe that the only information we should trust is from peer review journals. All right. What happens if the peer review journal itself is corrupt? What if the very process of getting these articles reviewed is fraudulent? Well, it is, and we'll show it to you. We're also going to continue what I started yesterday, but not all the stations had a chance around the country to hear it, because a lot of our stations yesterday listened to the program on what happened to all those Nazis, thousands upon thousands, where they relocated. And we got a lot of positive feedback. So today, I'm going to take a look at the newest economy reality, that young people today will never participate in the American dream, nor should they. We'll explain that. There is a professor of economics who's done all the critical analysis, and he's concluded that the American dream is dead. Professor Gregory Clark, University of California, Davis, found that social mobility had diminished significantly in the past 100 years, not just now. Quote, America has no higher rate of social mobility than medieval England or pre-industrial Sweden. That's the most difficult part of talking about social mobility. It's because it's shattering people's dreams, end quote. So what does that mean? What are the solutions? We'll share that with you also. Let's begin. We have discussed for a long time how some modification of the Mediterranean diet, meaning you could be a strict vegan and engage in Mediterranean diet, you could be a partial vegan and engage in Mediterranean diet. But as long as you're eating lots of fruits and vegetables, locally grown, you're exercising, you're taking your time, you're really taking your time when you're eating and you're socializing at that meal, and that's what they do. That's a very big part of the Mediterranean diet. It, by the way, when I was in the Mediterranean doing the World Games on the American team, there were five of us, they judged the first three, and we won the gold. And I went out, wanted to see what the cuisine was in this beautiful community. And I could immediately tell all the Americans, because they were already finished with their meal and looking around. And the Europeans, they weren't even finished with their first course. So in 15 minutes, the Americans are done and gone. And the others would be there for an hour and a half to 2 hours. Pacing yourself, slow food, slow eating, slow conversations. But that's also part of the Mediterranean diet. So vegetables, fruits, nuts, copious amounts of olive oil, and some people drink the red wine with a meal, others not. And that is the Mediterranean diet. So what they've done, according to the British Medical Journal, they found that the Mediterranean diet is associated, quote, with a longer telomere length. Why is that important? Because the longer the telomeres, the slower the aging process. It's relatively simple. Telomeres are DNA sequences situated at the end of chromosomes. Remember, I used the example that they're like the little binding at the end of a shoestring to keep it from unraveling. That would be your telomeres, and they help protect the physical integrity of the chromosomes, preventing them from fraying, which would scramble the genetic code held within. And telomeres naturally shorten as people age. Oh, you would have a tremendous quickening between infancy and adulthood, and then it slows again. And so the shorter your telomeres, the faster you are towards dying. Now, what we know is what will lengthen the telomeres is staying de-stressed, happiness, exercising, high intake of fruits, nuts, legumes, unrefined grains and vegetables, lots of olives and olive oil, and the quality fats in the diet. For those that eat fish, a moderate high intake of oily fish, and the healthiest fish still remaining in the world is sardines. And some people will have wine, some won't. But the wine that you find in Europe, because I've been in dozens and dozens of people's home, and most of them, just middle-class people, working people, have their own little vineyards, and they barter. And I was in one man's house. He had 12,000 bottles of wine. Some was older than 40 years that they collect and keep. It's kind of like a big hobby. And it has almost no alcohol, but it's a ferment, in which case the probiotics, but it has resveratrol. Now, here's the key. If you had your resveratrol from red wine, it's a relatively small amount, which shows that even in small amounts, it's good for you. It helps you. But then if you wanted far more, you would eat the grapes, grape concentrate, or grape juice. That gives you a lot more. Or if you wanted the most, you just take a resveratrol supplement, and that gives you the most of all. In any case, all this works together to create longer telomeres, longer lifespan. When you're stressed out all the time, when you're depressed, when you're anxious, when you're angry, you shorten your telomeres. So that's crucial. Now, a separate study at the University of Colorado, published in Advances in Experimental Medicine Biology, wanted to find out how red wine prevents cancer. So they really shouldn't say red wine. They should say resveratrol, the active ingredient in red wine, because that's what works. Quote, alcohol bombards your genes. Your body has ways to repair this damage, but with enough alcohol, eventually some damage is not fixed. That's why excessive alcohol use is a factor in head and neck cancer. Now, resveratrol challenges these cells. The ones with unrepaired DNA damage are killed, so they can't go on to cause cancer. Alcohol damages cells, and resveratrol kills damaged cells. end quote. That was from the professor at the University of Colorado Cancer Center, and he's professor of biochemistry and molecular genetics. So some of what we know about the ability of alcohol to cause cancer comes from the study of another disease, and namely Fanconi anemia. Now, that's a rare genetic disorder that affects about 1 in every 350,000 babies. And DNA naturally accumulates tangles. These are called cross-links. And healthy genes can repair and disentangle cross-linked DNA. In Fanconi anemia, people are born without the ability to repair DNA cross-links, and so DNA damage accumulates. Accordingly, patients with Fanconi anemia are at greater increased risk of developing cancers like leukemia or head and neck cancer. Quote, we learn a lot from genetic disorders because you can put a finger on a gene and say, hey, you know what that does? Well, according to the research, in fact, it turns out that a genetic accelerator of cancer in Fanconi anemia is the same as the cancer-causing mechanism in alcohol. In both cases, the cause is partially metabolized alcohol. The body metabolizes alcohol by converting it first to acetaldehyde, and then the body uses aldehyde dehydrogenase to further convert it to acetic acid, and which is excreted. So the partially processed state of alcohol, acetaldehyde, is a carcinogen and produces cross-links in DNA. So, quote, with enough alcohol, the body can get behind and end up with backlog of acetaldehyde. Increased exposure to alcohol, loss of this gene that helps the body process alcohol, and the loss of the ability to repair DNA cross-links are results in increased cancer risk. So then when they used resveratrol, it helped that whole process keep the disease cells, it purged them from the body, and hence is very important. So what's the takeaway message? The takeaway message is when you drink alcohol, you are directly killing heart cells, liver cells, kidney cells, and brain cells. And you could kill a million cells. But if you have 100 billion brain cells, you'd have to drink a lot of alcohol before you'd notice it. And that's the problem. The problem is the body is so perfect in its capacity to withstand all the things that we assail against it. All of the hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, colas, pizzas, not even counting the stress hormones that we turn on and can't turn off, or the epigenetic reactions of turning off our restorative DNA and turning on our fight or flight DNA as early children, where we process something as trauma and don't realize we just turn on a four-alarm fire and it's going to stay and it will ultimately cause disease. So the body is constantly, 24-7, 100 trillion cells are constantly working on your behalf. Now, so for those of you who think, okay, what's a likely outcome if I take something in that is not normal or natural to the body? It doesn't help it. It's going to hurt it. So if you take anything in that hurts the body, you're going to process disease. So if we stop doing that, that's good, but it doesn't repair what we've damaged. And that's why people give up smoking 10 years ago to get lung cancer. And people gave up drinking, still end up with cirrhosis of the liver or dementia. That's where the information that we share every day comes in, because we have been able to prove, and the scientific literature is there to support, that we can keep our telomeres longer. We can repair damage to almost any part of our body, the heart and the lungs and the brain and the eyes. If we not just eat a good diet and exclude the toxins, but then there are phytonutrients, there are polyphenols, there are antioxidants that actually are restorative. And that's what the average American is not yet aware of. Now, those who understand superfoods, they're aware of that. So that's the next step, is educating Americans about the importance of this. But when you're living in a culture like the Mediterranean, where so much of your lifestyle is not stressed in the way that we are, it doesn't mean that all the things you do are healthy, because you find a lot of people smoke over there. But when you have a quality of life, you've just added 20 years onto your life. About 20 good years. Meaning, you may die at 80, but you're not going to be sick from 60 to 80. You'll probably live a very complete life up until you have a heart attack or stroke. You don't see the long decades of impaired health in the Mediterranean that you see in the United States. So that's the takeaway message. Lack of vitamin D can lead to depression. This is from University of Georgia College of Education. And a new study found that if you don't have enough vitamin D, and the vast majority of Americans are deficient in vitamin D, then you end up with depression. So that also means that if you have enough vitamin D, you're less likely to be depressed. And that's why people who live in the South or in sunshine states are less depressed than those who live in northern states, because they're getting vitamin D. And finally, if you were to eat one food on a regular basis, organic, you could help prevent or reduce prostate cancer risk significantly. This is the latest study from University of Bristol in the United Kingdom. And this was also done from University of Cambridge and Oxford University. Quote, men who ate 10 portions of tomatoes or tomato products or tomato juice had an 18% reduction in development of prostate cancer. They studied some 12,000 men and then 1,806 men. Quote, tomatoes may be important in prostate cancer prevention. You bet. Lycopene. And it was published in the Cancer Epidemiology of Biomarkers and Prevention. So get your tomato juice. And by the way, it's so easy to make your own tomato juice or tomato sauce. And if you want to make a sweeter tomato, simply blanch off the skin of the tomato and then gently at a low temperature. And the temperature should be so low you can put your finger in and not burn your finger. That means you're preserving all the antioxidants, the phytonutrients. It's still a living food. It's for all intents and purposes, still raw. When you go boiling things at high temperatures, you're destroying your antioxidants. And you're altering a lot of the phytonutrients. So slow, low heat cooking with tomatoes, and you have, then it allows the natural sugar in the tomato to mature, and that's why slow cooked tomato sauces are sweet. And so you can do the same thing in making your own tomato juice. Blanch the skin, take it off, then throw the tomatoes into a blender. Add in your favorite seasonings. You might want to put, if you want it more tangy, you could put a little bit of apple cider vinegar, like a half a teaspoon. Some lemon juice would do, lime juice would do, some Himalayan sea salt, some black pepper, a little cayenne pepper. If you like the taste of garlic, then throw in a raw clove of garlic, and then blend it, and you've got the most wonderful tasting, highly nutritious, extremely energizing tomato juice. Then have that as a mid-afternoon or mid-morning snack. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on our health issues. For those of you living in California, you know that you're being impacted by the drought. And this is the latest from Natural News on that. Quote, the drought in California has unfortunately become a way of life for the majority of its residents, with many of them resorting to showering in portable stalls located in parking lots and getting on board with drinking recycled sewage water. Specifically, San Diego. They're working on plans now to recycle up to 83 million gallons a day of water. All right. Well, recycling is good. But, and there are three out of four other residents in the city are in favor of the plan. That's good. And one little kind of snafu here is that when you filter it, you cannot now, with the current systems that municipalities filter out pharmaceuticals. So they're using recycled water. And when people have chemicals in their body, if you're taking chemotherapy, your statins, or tranquilizers, they end up in the water. In fact, a lot of heavy metals end up in the water, and those are not filtered either. Aluminum, mercury, lead, cadmium, they can't filter those. Now, they can certainly filter high levels of bacteria, but they don't get all the parasites. There have been multiple outbreaks and people dying from parasites in the water, and they didn't know it. So, good news, they're conscious of the need to recycle. The bad news is they're not using a system that would really make the water pure. They might want to look at the research in Germany using ozonated water. That will make it pure. Also, good news in Germany, the largest utility company in Germany is deciding to eliminate all fossil fuels for renewables. This is from EcoWatch, quote, seeing not just the future of the environment, but also the future of its own economic environment, Germany's biggest utility announced this weekend that it was spinning off its fossil fuel plants to concentrate on a business model that focuses on renewable sources. It has long leaned heavily on fossil fuels and nuclear power, resisting the country's aggressive move to clean renewable energy generation. That all changed after Fukushima, and that changed when Angela Merkel shut down a third of the country's reactors and set in motion plans to mothball all nuclear reactors in the next 6 years. So they're also very aggressive about reducing carbon levels and ordering further emission cuts that would mean shutting down coal-generated power plants. So look at it this way. Germany is one of the leaders in the world in the latest form of voltaic cell for those who are using it, not just on the roof of their homes, but also in fans. And for all of you who live in a hot state, Florida is the exception because Florida just, and this is all because of the utility companies in Florida, they stopped allowing refunds if you put on solar. Up until now, if you put a solar system on your house in Florida, you got a rebate from the state. And you got a tax credit, as you should, because they were heavy investments. But it's terrific. My home is 100% solar. Plus, I have three redundant systems. So no matter what happens, I've got my own wells. I've got 100%. But I want to start by seeing what would happen in a hot climate where the heat accumulates in your attic, and then that forced the whole house to be hotter. A simple $150 solar fan. You can install it yourself. You put a fan at the entrance of your attic, like an old exhaust fan, and depending upon the square footage of your attic, and you put the simple solar panel on the roof, and the solar panel runs the fan draws out the heat, and you can drop almost 40 degree temperature. So if it's 150, it's now 110. And that means the rest of your house remains cooler. You use less air conditioning. In fact, I've now gone 2 years where I didn't use air conditioning because of solar. And then putting green ivy, Irish ivy, is the best because it'll last through anything it's resistant to. If it's hot, if it's cold, it doesn't matter. And the Irish ivy has a nice aesthetic to it, but once it grows up, it really grows tight. And it insulates you from the hot and insulates you from the cold. But it also gives that wonderful old world look of the ivy growing up over your house. So those two things are inexpensive. Most people could do an Irish ivy around their house. Let's say you have a 2,500 square foot house. You're looking at maybe $300. Plant it yourself. and put the solar fans in. That alone would make a difference. Now there's also solar paint. So that's a big new technology, and that's taking off. So I'm glad to hear that they're doing all this. Also, the United Nations just voted, but it was nowhere in the news. But I thought it was important because it shows our double standards. This is from Common Dreams. The United Nations calls for Israel to renounce nuclear weapons. The resolution urging Israel to sign on to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty passed the General Assembly in a landslide vote. The United Nations overwhelmingly voted to demand that Israel, quote, renounce possession of nuclear weapons and open its arms to global regulation. The measure, which is non-binding, was approved 161-5. And, of course, the United States, Canada, and Israel voted no. So why should Israel not be held to the same accountable standards as all other nations that have nuclear weapons? But they're not, and they'll get away with it. But at least the rest of the world is aware of it. Now, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to share with you a minimalist view of life. Now, why is this important, and why should we pay some attention to this? And then we're going to go to my guest right after that. It's because a whole generation of young people are caught in this trap, and we're all aware of it. 55% of college graduates are living at home. They have no job, or the job that they have is not in the field that required a college education, or it's in the field that they required a college education, but it's paying such a low amount of money that for all intents and purposes, they're in debt peonage. Now, they're in debt peonage, which means that states now, through privatization of the prison system, debtors' prisons have returned to 27 states, which means now if you don't pay your student loan or any debt, a credit card or any, you can be arrested. You then go through this private arrest into a private, almost Kafka-like system where the jail is privatized and you pay $150 a day. You have to pay administration costs. You have to pay to see a probation officer, and you have to see the probation officer on a regular basis. And every time you sit down with the probation officer, you're charged. And you could have a $40 ticket for parking in the wrong place. And because you don't have the money, you didn't pay it, so you're arrested. And then you have to pay for getting out. And then they generally can keep you in there 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, until someone pays the bill. And all the while, you're poor. Had you had the money, you'd have paid the $40 ticket. Now you got $400 or $4,000 or $40,000. Remember, on some of these debts, including a payday loan, you can pay 1,800% annual compounded interest. 1,800. And the legislators are not just allowing this to happen, they're part of the process, especially in Texas, where the person that oversees the entire payday loan system as on a state inspection board owns payday loan companies. The conflicts of interest are rampant. But that's true of every agency of government. Every building in the governmental arsenal is there for its own needs, not ours. Someday people wake up and realize how utterly corrupt, utterly worthless 70% of the entire government system is. It does not give a damn about anyone but itself. But you have to find that out for yourself, and then one day you're going to wake up and see that it's hit you somewhere. Did you know that you could be arrested and put into a debtor's prison in the United States? There are a lot of people who have and are in that system now. So now look at all the young people who are going to be in that system. Because who co-signed on their loans? Their parents or grandparents. And right now, they're garnishing up to a third of a person's Social Security check. Or if a person has any money in their bank account, they're allowed by law to take every single penny you have in your bank account, every penny, to cover the debt, which never stops. So you got to really think. Do you need to go to college? Most people shouldn't go to college. It's just stupid. But we are living in a stupid age with a lot of stupid thought and without thought of the consequences of our actions. So the people thought, well, I want to go get a college education so I get a job and I can have family and we can buy a house and we can live happily ever after. It's not going to happen. That game is over. And it was a fixed game all along. And if you want to know how fixed it is, ask how our gross domestic product grew over the last, let's say the last 10 years, from 2000 to 2010. It grew when people cashed out the equity in their house. They were using their house like an ATM machine. Now ask where those people. They're either out of their house, in debt, or underwater and paying for something that will never come back in value. How'd that dream work out for you? So there's another way. But another way means a different mindset. It means a different way of looking at the problem. It means looking at life from a different perspective. Back in a moment, when we're going to take a look at a person who's going to share some insights about the rich life, succeeding, he did, and then failing, that he did, and the lessons learned for all of us. You know I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please tell the phone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. We have Dr. Sherry Tenpenny standing by in a few minutes. We're going to talk with her, but I wanted to hear this because I think it's informative. I also want to mention that for those of you living in Los Angeles, tomorrow and for the next 7 days, we'll be premiering Poverty, Inc. at the Lamley Theater in Pasadena, and I'll give you the phone number you can call for reservations. People from the film will be there also in the evening, 310-478-3836, 310-478-3836. In New York, we're going to look for some volunteers because we're doing this as a fundraising for our sister station, WBAI, and we have 5 showings a day for 7 days, and we want to be able to hand out books and videos to the people and make sure they get in. So if you'd like to help out by volunteering to be down at the theater, the Quad on 13th Street, because our premiere is tomorrow. It's very exciting. We have people from the film who are going to be there. I'll be there each evening. One showing only I'll be there, because the second showing will be too late. But the 7:15 showing, we'll be having a discussion afterwards. And if you haven't got your ticket, do so, because otherwise you just got to call the Quad directly and get it. You can call today, and last time you can call in today to get your ticket for any one of the 35 showings starting tomorrow on West 13th Street between 5th and 6th. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. It is a sobering film. And the last part of the film is about solutions. And it was filmed all over the world. You won't want to miss it. Poverty, Inc. It is a powerful indictment about how we get ourselves. I have a whole section there on debtors' prisons. You get to see people who went to debtors' prisons who never thought that a SWAT team of 10 people would come, break open their door because they were late on a student loan. So it's just amazing to me, intentional indifference, where they go out of their way not to know the truth. But the people in this audience, they want to know the truth. That's why you're tuning in. Because this stuff is not going to be shown anywhere else. That I can promise you. So it's tomorrow's the premiere. We're looking forward to it. Now let's hear this.
Imagine a life with more. More time, more meaningful relationships, more growth and contribution. A life of passion unencumbered by the trappings of the chaotic world around you. Well, what you're imagining is an intentional life. It's not a perfect life. It's not even an easy life, but a simple one. What you're imagining is a rich life, the kind of rich that has nothing to do with wealth. You know, I used to think rich was earning $50,000 a year. Then when I started climbing the corporate ladder in my 20s, I quickly began earning 50 grand, but I didn't feel rich. So I tried to adjust for inflation. Maybe $75,000 a year was rich. Maybe $90,000. Maybe six figures. Or maybe owning a bunch of stuff. Maybe that was rich. Well, whatever rich was, I knew that once I got there, I would finally be happy. So as I made more money, I spent more money, all in the pursuit of the American dream, all in the pursuit of happiness. But the closer I got, the farther away happiness was. 5 years ago, my entire life was different from what it is today. Radically different. I had everything I ever wanted. I had everything I was supposed to have. I had an impressive job title with a respectable corporation, a successful career managing hundreds of employees. I earned a six-figure income. I bought a fancy new car every couple years. I owned a huge three-bedroom condo. It even had two living rooms. I have no idea why a single guy needs two living rooms. I was living the American dream. Everyone around me said I was successful. But I was only ostensibly successful. You see, I also had a bunch of things that were hard to see from the outside. Even though I earned a lot of money, I had heaps of debt. But chasing the American dream, it cost me a lot more than money. My life was filled with stress and anxiety and discontent. I was miserable. I may have looked successful, but I certainly didn't feel successful. And it got to a point in my life where I didn't know what was important anymore. But one thing was clear. There was this gaping void in my life. So I tried to fill that void the same way many people do, with stuff. Lots of stuff. I was filling the void with consumer purchases. I bought new cars and electronics and closets full of expensive clothes. I bought furniture and expensive home decorations, and I always made sure to have all the latest gadgets. Oh, and when I didn't have enough cash in the bank, I paid for expensive meals, rounds of drinks, and frivolous vacations with credit cards. I was spending money faster than I earned it, attempting to buy my way to happiness, and I thought I'd get there one day eventually. I mean, happiness had to be somewhere just around the corner, right? But the stuff didn't fill the void. It widened it. And because I didn't know what was important, I continued to fill the void with stuff, going further into debt, working hard to buy things that weren't making me happy. This went on for years. A terrible cycle. Lather, rinse, repeat. By my late 20s, my life on the outside looked great. But on the inside, I was a wreck. I was several years divorced. I was unhealthy. I was stuck. I drank a lot. I did drugs a lot. I used as many pacifiers as I could. And I continued to work 60, 70, sometimes 80 hours a week. And I forsook some of the most important aspects of my life. I barely ever thought about my health, my relationships, my passions. And worst of all, I felt stagnant. I certainly wasn't contributing to others, and I wasn't growing. My life lacked meaning, purpose, passion. If you would have asked me what I was passionate about, I would have looked at you like a deer in headlights. What am I passionate about? I had no idea. I was living paycheck to paycheck, living for a paycheck, living for stuff, living for a career that I didn't love, but I wasn't really living at all. I was depressed. Then, as I was approaching my 30s, I noticed something different about my best friend of 20-something years. Josh seemed happy for the first time in a really long time, like truly happy, ecstatic. But I didn't understand why. We had worked side by side at the same corporation throughout our 20s, both climbing the ranks, and he had been just as miserable as me. Something had to have changed. To boot, he had just gone through two of the most difficult events of his life. His mother just passed away, and his marriage ended, both in the same month. He wasn't supposed to be happy. He certainly wasn't supposed to be happier than me. So I did what any good best friend would do. I took Josh out to lunch. I sat him down, and I asked him a question. Why the hell are you so happy? He spent the next 20 minutes telling me about something called minimalism. He talked about how he spent the last few months simplifying his life, getting the clutter out of the way to make room for what was truly important. And then he introduced me to an entire community of people who had done the same thing. He introduced me to a guy named Colin Wright, a 24-year-old entrepreneur who travels to a new country every 4 months, carrying with him everything that he owns. Then there was Joshua Becker, a 36-year-old husband and father of two with a full-time job and a car and a house in suburban Vermont. And then he showed me Courtney Carver, a 40-year-old wife and mother to a teenage daughter in Salt Lake City. And there was Leo Babauta, a 38-year-old husband and father of six in San Francisco. Although all these people were living considerably different lives, people from different backgrounds with children and families and different work situations, they all shared at least two things in common. First, they were living deliberate, meaningful lives. They were passionate and purpose-driven. They seemed much richer than any of the so-called rich guys I worked with in the corporate world. And second, they attributed their meaningful lives to this thing called minimalism. So me being the problem-solving guy that I am, I decided to become a minimalist right there on the spot. I looked up at Josh. I excitedly declared, "All right, man, I'm going to do it. I'm in. I'm going to be a minimalist." Now what? You see, I didn't want to spend months paring down my items like he had. That was great for him, but I wanted faster results. So we came up with this idea of a packing party. We decided to pack all my belongings as if I were moving. And then I would unpack only the items I needed over the next 3 weeks. Josh literally helped me box up everything. My clothes, my kitchenware, my towels, my TVs, my electronics, my framed photographs and paintings, my toiletries, even my furniture. Everything. After 9 hours and a couple pizza deliveries, everything was packed. So there Josh and I were, sitting in my second living room, feeling exhausted, staring at boxes stacked halfway to my 12-foot ceiling. My condo was empty and everything smelled like cardboard. Everything I owned, every single thing I had worked hard for over the last decade was sitting there in that room. Just boxes stacked on top of boxes, stacked on top of boxes. Now, each box was labeled, so I know where to go when I needed a particular item. Labels like living room, junk drawer number one, kitchenware, bedroom closet, junk drawer number nine, so forth and so on. I spent the next 21 days unpacking only the items I needed. My toothbrush, my bed and bed sheets, the furniture I actually used, some kitchenware, a tool set, just the things that added value to my life. After 3 weeks, 80% of my stuff was still sitting in those boxes. Just sitting there, unaccessed. All those things that were supposed to make me happy, they weren't doing their job. So I decided to donate and sell all of it. And you know what? I started to feel rich for the first time. I started to feel rich once I got everything out of the way and made room for everything that remains. A month later, my entire perspective had changed. And then I thought to myself, maybe some people might find value in my story, in our story.
So Ryan and I did, I guess, what anyone would do. We started a blog. We called it The Minimalists. and that was 3 years ago. And then something amazing happened. 52 people visited our website in the first month. 52! I realize that might sound unremarkable at first, but that meant that our story was resonating with dozens of people. And then other amazing things started happening. 52 readers turned into 500. 500 became 5,000. And now, more than 2 million people a year read our words. It turns out that when you add value to people's lives, they're pretty eager to share the message with their friends and their family, to add value to their lives. Adding value, it's a basic human instinct.
Adding value to people's lives by living a minimalist life, focusing upon what is important, friendship, quality relationships, yourself, and living intentionally. That's the takeaway message, and I commend them for that. That's something we can all benefit from. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's go to our guest. We'll go to our guest in just a moment. If you'd like to call in on our talk back segment and share your thoughts with us, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. On an upcoming program, I'm going to give you a list of items that I believe we should be looking at to rejuvenate America, to get all the people who want to work again, and so that we can do something that's based upon our authentic needs and those that we hold in common, and break the addiction to serving those people who have become our corporate masters, the oligarchs. And hopefully this will also, some of these items may be included in the platforms for grassroots politicians, because we'll be giving it out to everyone that we know and say, we believe these are also important for helping to rejuvenate America. There's over 60 points that we can use, and we'll get them out to everyone. But I'll be going over these on an upcoming program in the next few days. Let's say hello before the calls come in. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
To make a quick comment on your show yesterday when you were talking about ozone therapy and its efficacy, and I absolutely resonated when you said that the people that really get results using biooxidative therapy are not just doing that, but they're doing other things to keep the immune system strong, like intravenous vitamin C and other IV vitamin therapies. They're changing their entire lifestyle. But most important, they're changing their whole belief system about dis-ease. And I used to run a wellness center after you closed your wellness center for 5 years. And I'm still getting calls today from people that are just discovering that they are reversing various viruses and parasites and things like that. So I wholeheartedly agree that biooxidative therapy could be an important piece of a very comprehensive protocol for health and wellness as people begin to detoxify. So I just wanted to make that comment. I wasn't able to get on yesterday. Somehow the phone disconnected.
Okay.
But I want to just throw that in.
Thank you. Thank you, Luann. We have Dr. Sherry Tenpenny now, and I want to go over, and she's on our Newsmaker update. There was a major article in Nature magazine talking about scientific journals and medical journals and the peer review process. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is a practicing physician. She's one of the country's most knowledgeable and outspoken physicians opposing the efficacy and safety of vaccines. And she is the founder and lead medical practitioner of the Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center in Strongsville, Ohio, and the author of Say No to Vaccines. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks, Gary. Nice to hear you, too.
I wanted you on to talk about this whole scandal that the major medical journals are having people put on published articles, that are peer-reviewed, but the peer-review process is flawed, and there's conflict of interest. How much of this review fraud is associated with medical research of certain pharmaceutical drugs, and how much can Big Pharma be tied to the scandals?
This has been going on for quite some time. It was interesting to see such a robust article about the peer review scam in Nature magazine, because authors have, scientists have actually hired their own researchers. Sometimes we've had researchers for hire that have been paid to just sign off on papers. It seems as though many scientists now can pick their own panel of peer review people. And in this particular article that was in Nature magazine, apparently the scientist signed off on his own peer reviewed papers. So when conventional medical doctors say that the only thing that they believe in are peer-reviewed articles, and that's the only thing that is valid science, it makes you question and wonder if they are fully aware of the scam of peer review and how long this has been going on. There's a website called Retraction Watch. It's retractionwatch.com. I've been a member of that blog for a couple of years, and they post the retractions of scientific papers, whether it's in the pharmaceutical area, vaccines, scientific papers that are on in talking about plant research or enzyme research, and there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of scientific papers that are retracted each year because of scientific fraud.
That is part of the problem. The other part is that much of the research being done, even legitimate scientific papers, meaning that there's no one reviewing their own paper or having a friend review it. This came from one of the top people who sat on peer review systems. He said that it's a small group and you're going to be passing judgment on each other's work. And therefore, no one wants to have someone reject your work because you rejected theirs. So it becomes a system where 95% of what is funded by the federal government each year is worthless.
I believe that that's true. In fact, it's even noted in this paper that it says in the last 2 years, journals have been forced to retract more than 110 papers and at least 6 instances of peer-reviewed rigging. So how much scientific information is out there that we adopt as usual and customary because it was published in the New England Journal or JAMA or some other peer-reviewed journal that physicians hang their hats on that lead them down a slippery path of using methodologies and reciting science that really isn't science?
I agree with that. Well, the takeaway message here is that what historically had been the so-called gold standard, a peer-reviewed journal, it doesn't mean anything today because we don't know if the actual science is good. We don't know if the paradigm in which it's based upon is legitimate. For example, chemotherapy, treating cancers. You could have 1,000 articles on chemotherapy, but the entire field of chemotherapy has been challenged as a legitimate paradigm. So if you have an article published and it's peer-reviewed, it doesn't mean anything because they're not looking at any other non-toxic alternative, and they're not looking at any other physician who's treated successfully cancer without chemotherapy. So the paradigm is flawed, the methodologies are flawed, the mindset is flawed, and now it's corrupted. So,
and I find it very interesting that back several years ago, when the one paper by Dr. Andrew Wakefield on the MMR vaccine was retracted and scandalized across all news medias for years, and have embraced it and burned it into parents' head that this was a fraud because this one paper was retracted. When you think about how many hundreds of papers are retracted that never make the mainstream news, it becomes very clear that this was intentionally done to discredit Dr. Wakefield and to try to get parents to stop questioning vaccines.
And of course, Wakefield has been completely exonerated by Dr. Thompson at the CDC, who acknowledged as a whistleblower that he participated in the fraudulent studies. So,
exactly.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, for this Newsmaker update.
Thank you. Take care.
To complete our program today, let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley, California. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for the program today. And I'd like to, I don't know if you read about it, but Holland has just created something new in transportation. It's a solar electric bicycle path. And it was a novel idea. What they did was they took solar cells and embed them in concrete and then put a very strong tempered glass cover and a non-skid surface on the glass. And they have it up and going. You can find it on your favorite search engine. If you put in Amsterdam bicycle solar electric bicycle pass, And I think that this can be replicated worldwide. This is something new. It could supply power to the various areas along the way. It could create a whole new transportation system, especially in America. And here's a working model of it. I call it the Sunway. So it could even lead to the power induction transportation with electric bikes by using inductive power, which is the it's a wireless charge that an electromagnetic field transfers energy between two objects. In the case, this would be the roadway and the electric bike. So it's the potential is open for carbon-free transportation, especially now with the introduction of electric hub wheel motors. That power everything from bikes to cars to everything. This is the beginning of the electric vehicles. So the Sunway, I think it's the way to go. And I just want to tell you and the world about solar-powered bicycle paths.
Thanks a lot, Harvey. We appreciate your input. And that brings up the end of this show. I want to thank you all for calling in and for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day. Let's say hello to Sonia from New York City. Hi, Sonia. Sonia, you're on the air.
I love your program.
Thank you.
I've been listening to you for a long time, and I just wondered, I'm really interested in doing a solar project, and I wonder if you could recommend a good attorney, somebody who could advise me on documents and, you know, how to work with the right experts in the field.
Just send anything over, and I'll be happy to redirect you to the different groups out there. There are a lot of groups doing this, and there's no reason you shouldn't network with them. Thank you, Sonia. And let's say hello to Luann Panesse again. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here. The person didn't sign their name, but they said that they once had one of the most joyful evenings that they could remember. But it was kind of a surprise due to the circumstances. All day long, there was a gathering of some of the finest intellects and scholars and social activists in the country at the home of Jean-Louis Bourgeois. His mother is one of the most celebrated artists, Louise Bourgeois. At 6 o'clock, you showed up, and Jean-Louis asked you to sit beside him, and he started asking you health questions. I've never met you, but I listened on the radio. I heard you say that one of the reasons you don't go to parties is because of all the health questions you get. I felt for you. But it went on for an hour, and you answered every one of his questions and everyone else's questions. And then the fireworks began. When you were asked who you would support, Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or Elizabeth Warren, you said none of them. And that got our attention. You said you would only vote for a true populist like Ralph Nader. That got the former ACLU head, Norman, going on a bitter harangue against him and how he would never be electable. He said Nader was an 80-year-old egomaniac who has not done anything productive in years. But you made some good points. In your soft voice, you discussed the very day that you read a commentary by Ralph on the air about the high cost of fibrocystic drugs. $3,000 a year for one drug.
$300,000.
Okay. Every 3 weeks, you read a commentary by Nader, and it was about some other important item that was about the common people. Had Ralph Nader been elected, there would have not been a 9/11. There wouldn't be an Afghan war. There wouldn't be a recession. We'd have a reinstatement of the Glass-Steagall Act. No bank bailouts would have been given, and we would have had a vital reordering of our infrastructure. Nader also caused several laws to be reenacted. And he wasn't even a politician at the time. So from 1965 to 1998, he was one of the most popular Americans, and he chose not to run for office. There was a stunned silence when you were done. And Norman just looked up and said, touche. Then all forms of conversation broke out about quantum physics and other topics to which you responded gently and thoughtfully, and topics that were also controversial for over 3 hours, and you finally left. I wanted to thank you for making that day the most productive and stimulating afternoon that I can remember.
That's nice. That was just last week. That was the day before Thanksgiving. And I appreciated being in the presence of so many progressive minds and so many thoughtful people. And having a spirited debate is always good for the brain cells. It stimulates us and keeps us alive and thinking. Appreciate the input. Thank you.
Okay.
And let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today it's the grand jury fury why there was no indictment in the Eric Garner chokehold case.
You didn't expect one, did you?
Oh, no, we predicted that on August the 19th.
Yeah. The statistics are staggering of how few times a police officer is indicted compared to other citizens. We look forward to hearing your insights. Utrice Lead,
Thank
right
you.
Now.